It's 8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
Live from the National Studios in Broadcasting House here in Accra, I am George Asikri with this edition of Behind the News, where we bring you latest updates and detailed analysis of current happenings in Ghana and beyond. Tonight, the aborted and popular road towing levy. What alternative policy will help end the carnage on our roads? We'll be finding out shortly. And anti-Four Nyasengwe demonstrations in Togo leaves scores dead and sparks fears of a destabilized Togo. How best can the situation be addressed? We find out. Stay tuned for the next 1 hour as we bring you details of all these stories on our show tonight. Our text line is 0266-026-941.
It's probing, it's intrusive, yet exciting. Your daily news analysis program, Behind the News, is on Radio Ghana at 8 p.m. sharp, Monday to Friday. Join the crew and be part of all the interesting analysis and hard interviews on your exciting Behind the News. Also heard on Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, Sunrise FM 106.7 in Kofodia, Radio BAR 93.5 Sunyai, Radio Upper West 90.1 in Wa, Volta Star Radio 91.1 and 91.3 in Ho, Obonu FM 96.5 Tema, and Twin City Radio 94.7 in Sekendi Takrade. And remember, we are on GBC's unique FM 95.7, which is online via TuneIn Radio.
Welcome back. Government has set aside the recommendation of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Transport to go ahead with the implementation of the mandatory towing levy. Originally scheduled to commence on the 1st of last month and later on the 1st of next month, the government decision was arrived at after consultations between the Minister of Transport and stakeholders in the transport sector. As a result, government has decided to seek a review of parts of the law, the concept of the mandatory towing levy on all owners and persons in charge of motor vehicles and trailers. Also, the role of government in the provision of towing services will be limited to only licensing and regulating service providers. So where does this leave us? We have on the line the chairman of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Transport, Samuel Ayepi, who is also the Member of Parliament for Ayinsuano. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
My name is Anas Arimiao Anas. I'm an investigative journalist. I get very, very busy with my investigations, but I always find time to listen to Behind the News on GBC Radio. Listen to Behind the News from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. every weekday.
Welcome back. We lost the honourable member on the line, but we have him back. Samuel Ayepi is the chairman of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Transport and Member of Parliament for Ayinsuano. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
And thanks for your time. Your recommendation has been ignored by government. Where does that leave the committee?
Well, that's a good question. If you have had a copy of our recommendation, then a copy of the press release. I don't think.
Hello. Please, can you reposition yourself? Your line is not too clear.
What I'm saying is that, is it okay now?
Yeah, quite better.
Okay. If you have a copy of our recommendation, and then you also have a copy of the press release that had been released by the Minister of Transport, you will not conclude that our report has been set aside. Paragraph 6 of our report indicates that the minister and then the agency, the National Road Safety Commission, should do further consultation and also a broader education program, and then get back to the committee before implementation of the project. So if after the consultation and education, the minister thinks that a majority of Ghanaians are not in favor of the project and has been suspended, going back to for a review, I don't think we can conclude this, it has been set aside. As we all know, the minister don't have a mandate to abolish an act or an LI passed by parliament. So it is not proper to say that the minister has set aside. If you read the minister's press release, he did not mention in any of his release that he has set aside a committee's recommendation or set aside an LI passed by parliament and get to this.
So should we be having the impression that higher chances are still that the policy will see the light of the day?
Exactly. Yes. The minister said that he's coming out with new modalities. So at the end of the day, there will be towing, except that the current system is what the minister is doing and come with a new program or a new system that Ghanaians will fare as compared to what we have, what we wanted to implement now.
But our understanding was that the public outcry was because of the wholesale levy, and which the statement from the minister says is going to be looked at again.
What he said, that there are two major issues the minister mentioned in his mandatory fee, and also number two, looking at legislation.
Your line is getting bad again. If you can reposition yourself. Hello. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. The line is not too good for us, but let's go to the other line and speak with Godfred Achiadakwa. He is the Chief Executive Officer of Road Safety and Transportation Consultancy Limited. And he's also the Vice President of Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
As if you were a prophet, you said this thing wouldn't see the light of the day from day one. Are you feel exonerated?
So much. Ghanaians have spoken. Ghanaians have made their mind clear. Government has listened. That is democracy. That's all that we want. That's what I
want. Hello, Mr. Achiadakwa, can you reposition yourself? Your line is not clear.
Wow. Yes. Is it better now?
Quite better.
Wow. This network. Yeah. So, you see, so it is a welcome news. And congratulations to Ghanaians. And it is not only Chartered Institute of Transport and Logistics, or it's not only RSCC that was talking. A whole lot of Ghanaians were talking. They saw that the philosophy behind the thing is excellent. Nobody wants any vehicle to break down to cause obstructions and cause crashes. But the implementation was strong. That is what all about. And there were two critical things that people were talking about. And that's what the government had listed. We are happy government. We have a listening government. We are happy government is also... there's a key thing that I want to be stressed here. The parliamentarians can come out with the law. They can come out with their regulations. But if their regulations don't have the human faith, it will face public outcry and it cannot see the light of the day. This is just what has happened.
The parliamentarians are still of the opinion that we shouldn't be rejoicing yet because... I just spoke to Samuel Ayepe and he says that the policy is under review and higher chances are that it still could be implemented.
It could be implemented, but not the whole thing option that we're coming to cut and put on our throat. Yes, they can leave the law, but they cannot make it mandatory that everybody or somebody should pay for the negligent act of somebody. It will not work. It is not fair. It is not equitable. It will not work. So if they are reforming it and they don't take up that canker from the whole thing, it will not see the light of the day. But if they bring the human face aspect of it, that we can see that this policy that is coming, we know, we support it, and the way they want to run it, like the ones we are suggesting, if they go by that, why don't? None of us will go for it.
Which one are you suggesting?
We are suggesting that each and everyone should try to pay for his negligence and recklessness act, and nobody should be made to pay for somebody's negligence. For example, I keep on saying, maintenance and services prevents vehicles from breaking down the road. If you maintain a vehicle well and service a vehicle well, it will not break down the road. So if somebody is not doing that, and then he has his vehicle breaking down on the road, he has to pay for the due. So what we are saying is, you should have the zoning aspect that is in the initial agreement, that the whole country is zoned, all the towage vehicles and the towage companies are recognized. And if a vehicle has had a problem, it is already the onus lies on the police to perform their duties. If a vehicle is broken down, the police have to tow it. How does the police do it? They contact any towage vehicle within the zone. Then they tow it into safety. Outside from causing any obstruction, then if the vehicle owner comes, then he has to pay for that service. If he fails to come for some lengthy time, then the towage company have the option, backed by law, or seek the law's legal action, and then sell that vehicle to defray their cost. That is perfect, and nobody will talk about this one. Excellent.
Well, the difficulty I am seeing with that argument is you may succeed in not getting somebody to pay for the negligence of another person, but you cannot succeed in getting that negligent person from paying for the cost in terms of life lost of the other.
That is why breakdown vehicles should not be allowed to be on the road even for more than 2 hours. We can reduce that hour to even more than 30 minutes or 1 hour. And look, most of the vehicles that are causing all these ones are the big trucks. So the big truck owners should be so responsible. They should exhibit high signs of responsibility. And that type of responsibility is not shared, cannot be shared. It's singular responsibility. And if it happens, then it becomes singular irresponsibility. And that irresponsibility must be on the head of the person who has caused it.
Well, Mr. Atajesh, hold the line for me. I have back on the line the chairman of the Parliamentary Select Committee on the Transport, Samuel Ayepe. Good evening and welcome back. Sorry we lost you earlier.
Thank you. Yes, you're lying, Doctor.
Yes, you were making a point. I don't know if you finished that, but the alternative view is that you could adopt other strategies instead of even looking
at the strategy. If you listen carefully or if you read what the minister put out there, clearly, coming up with new modalities, there will be changes in the current proposals. And then he's even seeking to review the LI and then bring it back to Parliament for approval. And then with this, definitely Ghanaians have spoken, we've heard different opinions. And I think these opinions and views expressed by Ghanaians are going to inform the minister to come out with a new LI. But it's an issue that I think we all ought to be aware of. Some people talk as if an LI is drafted and passed by Parliament. As a matter of fact, even new Supreme Court ruling does not allow Parliament to amend or to make changes in LI when it is laid in Parliament. When the CIs and the LIs are laid in Parliament, we only wait for 21 sitting days and it passed. Either we pass or we reject the LI. But when people talk as if Parliament starts somewhere and then drafted the law and push it on Ghanaians, forgetting that the law was actually drafted by the executive.
But does it mean that if the executive should bring a very bad law, it will still go through Parliament?
No, we have every right to reject it. That's why I said either we accept or we reject it. Do you get my point?
Yeah.
So if the law tends to be a bad law and people say, hey, the executive has done nothing wrong by Parliament, I disagree. You are right to say that, yes, if we think it's a bad law, we can throw it away. But at the same time, we should also not forget the fact that it started from the executive. Be even drafted, be have the opportunity to do transportation and all that. So as we all agree that this law was passed in 2012, of which though it's in parliament, but some of the members that we are blaming today may not even be part of that parliament. And it is not nor by saying one, it is a whole LI that was passed. Most of the sections in the LI has already been implemented. This Section 12 is only one that is creating some challenge. So the minister says he's coming out with a review. Let us wait and see what he brings. We'll discuss it, and when all Ghanaians see that, yes, this is what we want, why not? We make law to govern the people. So the people, the very people that the law is going to govern, must be listening to before the laws.
The people must be listened to, but per the work you have done, if more than 25% of carnage on our road are caused by disabled vehicles and the people are speaking because of the token they will pay, should you listen to the people at the expense of human lives?
That is more reason why I said that at the end of the day they'll be towing. And then you said that I said be happy now because the project or the program was implemented. To not be just to be implemented, but according to the minister, not as we have it now. Yeah, so we all agree to the fact that yes, there are danger on the road that need to be removed. How to remove it is what we are all talking about. During our consultation at the Parliament Select Committee, none of the organizations that I would just say that oh, the project is not, it's a bad thing. It's a good thing, except that they express worry about how the project is being done. And then after our report, we've also heard a lot of suggestions and then opinion expressed by Ghanaians. And I'm of the view that, yes, we have to listen to them. As I said, what we have to do is speed up the review that the minister wants to make. So in a very short time, we get that.
The impressions we have outside is that there is some kind of contractual arrangement here involving the state and the agency that was going to do the implementation. And so if it is going to be aborted for now...
There was a contract that was signed by the ministry and after the data in October, the LI that was passed in 2012. So, but according to the information minister, deputy information minister, I heard him on radio yesterday, this morning, he's saying that he's talking to Attorney General's department and they have studied the contract and you don't think there's any problem when the contract is abrogated. So let's see how things are unfolding and see how. And for that matter, the minister will not take any decision, knowing very well that it is going to bring a judgment or in this. And I think the Attorney General Department has that so they will advise the minister appropriately before the minister has come up with this statement.
A life lost cannot be replaced, no matter what we do. So, in the meantime, what do you suggest be done?
Of last week, I was with the National Witnessing Commission in Koforidua on their media review. In fact, some of the reports received from some regions are very, very, very serious. Ashanti region, for instance, they were have a target of 79 people supposed to be killed by road accident in 2000. The first quarter of 2070 ended up having about 169 people. So you can see the difference. It's serious. So what we have to do now is that the National Road Safety Commission and then the other stakeholders must intensify education on awareness on the road as the minister is going through the process to get this implemented or the review being done. So what we can see is that people should be very careful when driving. You should not speed when you don't see 40 meters ahead of you. If the stopping distance, the average stopping distance relative to your speed should be 40 meters ahead of you. If your stopping distance is less than 40 or more less than 40 meters, you must kill your speed or reduce your speed to 50 kilometers per hour. When we do this, then if there's any obstacle ahead of you, you will be able to stop, or the impact may not be as hard as it is.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Very grateful, sir. Samuel Ayapi is the chairman of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Transport. We have still Mr. Achia Dakwa on the line. You've heard the chairman, but moving forward, the reality on the ground is that we have all these provisions in our status books, yet the carnage on the road continue to be on the rise. What makes you think that something can change with the current arrangement?
I must be honest with you to say that we are still not comfortable with the blowing out of proportion of the percentage they are giving and attributing it to breakdown vehicles. That vehicle's running to cost 25%. My brother, pedestrian knockdown contribute to about 42 to 43% of the people that we kill on the road. What are you doing about that? What is the comparison of 42% to 25%? So we're talking about 55% of the causes of a road accident as a result of overspeed, high speed. What is the comparison of 55% to 25% that we're talking about? So if the tollway levy has been discontinued, there are so many things that we can do. I'm happy the parliamentary chairman, select committee chairman, is also hammering on education and awareness. That is a critical thing we've been talking about. Look, even if the vehicles are broken down and are on the street, cause of obstruction, if the driver is well trained, is well aware about the consequences of not avoiding that breakdown vehicle, and then knowing for sure that if he hits that vehicle, what is going to happen to them? If the person is well educated, understand the value of life, you do the right thing on the road. So I think the key thing is education, and awareness.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show. Very grateful, sir. Godfred Achiadakwa is the Vice President of the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport and also the Chief Executive Officer of Road Safety and Transportation Consultancy Limited. We also have on the line the Director of Training and Research of the Police MTTD, DSP Alexander Obain. DSP, good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
And thanks for your time. The last speaker ended up on education, training, here and there. And you in person have engaged in this for a very long time, both on radio, on the road, and so on and so forth. Yet, carnage is still on the rise. With the law is position now, the work is back on you on the road. What will you do?
I think, good evening, Nani. I want to say that whilst modalities are being put in place in consultation with other processes to code by the Inspector General and Police Administration, we will sustain the routine sensitization as my colleague Mr. Chadwick said, and for us, education and sensitization is very important in this enterprise, in addition to our stringent enforcement on this end. We've been doing it all this while. So, education, yes. When your vehicle, before you embark on any journey, every vehicle owner is being entreated to ensure that the vehicle is conspicuous with the required standardized the routine one being the red at the rear and the white on the white and the front bumpers, and on certain vehicles we entreat that all vehicle owners continue to comply with regulation 80 to put on their vehicles yellow reflective tape on the middle portion of the rear and then on the side, and add two advanced warning triangles so that when the vehicle is involved in a difficulty and becomes immobilized, the driver or the owner will display the advanced warning triangle appropriately and at the same time or simultaneously call the police hotlines as we've been sensitizing. So, and this is routine, and we expect all vehicle owners and drivers not to forget that the following these numbers that I'm going to mention should be stored on their mobile phones or kept in some treasured documents in the vehicle, including on the wallet. And the numbers are 191 on all networks. You will not be charged for using it. Call police. and 18555, and of course 0302 773906. And when these things are triggered, these lines are triggered, definitely police will respond to the distress call and come to your aid to support you to get such details of the road. So that is what we've been doing, and we expect all stakeholders to support in this direction, particularly drivers and vehicle owners.
So beyond the numbers on your part, what else can you do when it comes to towing the disabled vehicle, since our understanding is that you don't even have the facilities, the towing facilities?
Well, I think I've said that the honest, as the community said, and for the general police will consult and put the right modalities in place in consultation with the other stakeholders. And when the way forward is outlined, all of us will comply and also do what we have to do. So let's give that administration a little while, and then, you know, the Inspector General of Police will come out clearly and we will follow. But we all know what is expected of us. Let's do what we can, because all of us cannot throw our hands into the air. That will, because the police hasn't got maybe a certain number of vehicles, work should not be done. We have to proactively continue to deliver the services required under this to ensure that such risks are removed.
All right. DSP, I want to thank you very much for your time on our show. Very grateful.
Thank you very much.
DSP Alexander Obeng is the Director of Training and Research of the Police MTTD. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. We also have on the line the Chairman of the Committed Drivers Association of Ghana, Charles Danson. Good evening, Mr. Danson, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, George. Thank you for having
me. You people were planning to hit the streets because of...
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Mr. Danso, can you hear me?
Yeah, your lines are very faint. So
okay. I said that the policy to kickstart the mandatory towing exercise has been suspended. Are you excited about that?
Okay, first of all, let me say a good welcome, good evening to all your listeners and then you as well. And let's say we thank the government for suspending this implementation. You see, as we are saying, the implementation itself is not a bad idea, but the mandatory or compulsory aspect of it, don't agree for it to be so. And let's ask if I could have get an opportunity to speak one-on-one to Honorable Aipeye. I will have asked him, do they know the regulation 186 aspect of the road law?
I'm sure they know very well.
Regulation 186 aspect of the road law. You see, when they, the politicians, or the government and the Minister of Roads and Highways and then Urban Roads do implement theirs to construct the lay-by and the rest stop points, it will supersede all this towing hula baloo we are talking of. You see, they don't want to. They want to enjoy what Ghana has, and we are telling them after they go back and then come again and then implement it as he was saying, we will never agree for that compulsory and death mandatory. You see, and as I'm speaking, we Ghana Committed Drivers Association will give a big thanks to the media and the president as well, for listening to us and then for them to cancel this implementation.
In fact, we've had some lawyers and doctors on radio saying, oh, it will create jobs for people, and it will do this, and it will do that. There is a say in Akan proverb saying, you see, if we, the drivers and cowards, have money, we have done more better than the government, but we don't have it. We don't have the capacity. They shouldn't always make we the drivers and the cowards like that. We beg them that mandatory or compulsory aspect of this to go and sleep, and we don't want to hear it anymore.
All right, Charles, I want to thank you very much for your time. We are very grateful. Charles Danso is the chairman of the Committed Drivers Association of Ghana. We also have on the line the executive secretary of Chamber of Petroleum Consumers Ghana, COPEC, Duncan Amoa. Good evening, sir, and welcome to the program.
Let me say good evening to you, to your listeners most especially, and then to Charles Danso for the bold demeanor with which he has gone about the resistance so far. I happen to have met him one early morning, somewhere 4 or 5 months ago, and I think he's been very consistent, one of the voices that have stood the course. And for media persons like you, we equally are very grateful that for once, Ghanaians could come to a point where parliamentarians didn't have the eventual final say, and that certain aspects of law that they pass, Ghanaians could equally stand and request that it be expunged or be cancelled altogether. And so this is where we have gotten to, where today Ghanaians would have to stand up for themselves. Because it doesn't look as though the Committee on Transport that was put in there to see to our interests was working really in our interest. It looked as though even the public outcry or outburst when the announcement was made initially that the toll was going to come into effect in July, what COPEC said, what other progressive Ghanaians did say, seemed not to have mattered to the Committee on Transport in Parliament. And so they came back quickly to say they've done everything, and the policy is good. It would have to come back in full force in September, and that implementers should take the period left to go back and educate. When Ghanaians have said, no, don't surcharge everybody for the offense of somebody or some other person. If somebody has a challenge on the road, it is in the person's own interest that his vehicle is moved somewhere safe where they can fix the vehicle and attend to other things. Unfortunately,
I'm sure you
make it a collective thing. You are only moving responsibility from the individual in distress or the individual who negligently abandoned the vehicle to punish everybody. Unfortunately, that was not something justice would allow. So Ghanaians vehemently kicked against it.
The tendency to do the wrong thing is always there. And I'm sure that explains partly why we have laws. We may have succeeded in getting the government to suspend or withdraw this. But what we haven't done anything about is the reality on the ground. 25% of carnage on our roads is still there and probably on the rise.
Very good. In fact, the more reason we think against this wasn't just a conciliation or, I mean, just getting it off. But we fought against this because the problem on our hands, this policy wasn't looking at solving the problem. Let me do a three-way test. The argument emotively or emotionally earlier was that if we don't pay, indeed 25% are dying because of road crashes as a result of abandoned vehicles. We went ahead to ask if we paid would nobody die again? You don't get the answers forthcoming, and you would probably never get a yes to that. It means that we probably are not applying the right solution. Then you ask again, what really causes these vehicles to get abandoned in the first place? Have we been able to go back there to check? Is it a case of overaged vehicles? Is it a case of vehicles that are probably overloaded or carrying way and above the axle or the tonnage that it is prescribed to carry? 32-tonner carrying 40-ton load would eventually have challenges on the road and naturally come to a halt at some point. So one ends up not having to look for any mystery. These are things we could easily find out. Is it the case of overage vehicles? Is it the case of overloaded trucks? Is it the case also of bad roads?
Okay.
Is it the case of lay-bys and rest stops that the Road Safety Act 2005 had prescribed that we should provide rest stops and by-lays so that these trucks, after driving for a period, can at least get somewhere they could just rest for a bit.
Right.
We don't provide those things. So the vehicles will naturally break down.
All yes, right.
Going ahead to charge everybody for towing was not only a lazy approach, but it wasn't going to solve the problem from what we saw from the entire documentation.
Thank you very much, sir, for your time on our show tonight. We are very grateful.
Thank you.
Duncan Amwa is Executive Secretary of the Chamber of Petroleum Consumers Ghana, COPEC. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana and moving on to other stories. At least two people lost their lives when thousands of Togolese hit the street over the weekend in protest over the long rule of the Nyasingbe family in that country. The protesters wanted the restoration of the 1992 constitution, which prescribes the tenure of the office of the sitting president. The opposition element have described the five-decade control of power of the Nyasingbe family as a rule of dynasty and not democracy. President Nyasingbe Iyadema died whilst in office in 2005 after he had ruled for some 38 years, and his son Fo Nyasingbe took over and has since been in power. So what does the development in Togo mean for the sub-region? We have on the line an international relations expert and director of academic affairs, Ghana Armed Forces Command and Staff College, Dr. Vladimir Ntridanson. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
Doc, with the latest development in Togo, what does it mean for the sub-region?
Hello, the line is breaking.
The development in Togo, what does that mean for governance in the sub-region?
If I heard you correctly, you were asking the event in Togo, what did it vote for? Can you...
Yes.
Well, the event in Togo is significant. Significant in several ways. In the first place, it shows the non-alignment of the opposition and the governing body. It shows also that something is going on which the opposition begin with.
Was it something that was seen long ahead? Hello? We have some difficulty with the line. We shall try and re-establish contact with Dr. Vladimir Ntridanson. On the line, Dr. Vladimir Ntridanson. Doc, sorry we lost you on the line.
Yes.
I was asking whether it's something that was predicted long ago, the action of the opposition.
Well, it may not have. You know, opposition is opposition. They could be mischievous.
Okay.
The opposition would like to use...
Hello?
...that the opposition has seen to end the so-called dynastical rule of the Iyadema family. And so if the opportunity has rendered itself, they would like to make a statement, and that's what they're making.
Is it possible the regional bodies can come in at this stage and restore sanity?
Absolutely not. I mean, I've heard some persons in Ghana are asking the Ghana government to intervene. That would be very wrong in international relations. Very wrong. You know, it becomes very difficult when you want to intervene. Normally, interventions, especially the military kind of intervention, takes place when the situation has gone beyond the capacity and the capability of the ruling government. And therefore, interventions are very rare. Because if you intervene, you may exacerbate the situation. So by now, the only intervention is a diplomatic one. At best, if the situation is going bad, the regional body may send a delegation, the panel of the wise, for example, to go talk to both sides. I bet you by this time, several governors of Africa, African countries, and what I mean the president and prime ministers of African countries, may have used what we call the hotline. And they may have called both the opposition and the government to exercise restraint. So we have not reached a point where you need some military intervention or that sort of thing. I mean, to be suicidal in international relations if any country did that or the regional body did that. And let me warn, if even ECOWAS wants to intervene, it will take no less than 6 months to mobilize and intervene in any country in West Africa.
And that could have fatal consequences because chances are that the ruling government might unleash danger on the people using the military.
Sure. In every country it happens, even in America. Everywhere where the opposition or elements that are non-governmental start fighting government, yes, the military is called in, the police are called in, there are brutalities. But history has shown us that until the government itself has lost it, you see the opposition getting the upper hand. Many more people are being killed. Police stations are being overrun. The military is incapable of holding together. That is only when interventions can come in. And so anybody who is saying that, oh, we don't have to lose many people before we come in, it's not done in history. I mean, it's never happened. And mobilization itself is very difficult. For the UN to move, it has never been spontaneous. And that is why the AU and the ECOWAS, when we wanted to go to Mali, we were going to go to Mali in September. By April, the Tuaregs were almost close to the capital. You know, so but for the French intervention, things would have gone worse. So international bodies are having difficulty in doing quick mobilization. It's not there.
The Fonya Singbe still has about 3 years to end his tenure in office. So what possibly, apart from mischief, could lead to this action at this time?
Well, you can't predict any mischief from anywhere. I think mischief is the first one. Because the Togolese themselves accepted the situation in 2005. ECOWAS and the AU went in 2006, and then the elections. So the point is that what else? What they have to do is actually fight for what some of us did fight for in Ghana, for the crystallization of democracy. From 1989, Ghanaians were almost every day on the streets demanding a return to democracy. And, you know, we used the opportunity offered by the collapse of the Soviet Union and the death of monolithic governance, dictatorship in the whole world. And that opportunity offers itself, and the kind of opposition that was led in Ghana crystallized in the 1992 constitution. Institutions were formed, and now we are perfecting them.
But it appears our system was quite different. They have a kind of one-party hegemonic democracy going on there.
During Rawlings' 11 years rule, we had one party. What I'm saying is that one opportunity is for you need to perfect a thing and not destroy yourself.
Oh, okay.
And so what they are doing, there is a possibility that they may be emaciated by the government invariably. What Gbagbo did in Cote d'Ivoire was, excuse me to say, a little stupid. Because if he had stepped back and maintained his party, they could have fought back. Now, he's given rise, what he did has given rise to his own party almost dying, you know. So in such a situation, history is our teacher. And I think the Togolese opposition, having gone through all these things in 1960, should have known how to work. And again, they are never united. And again, what they are doing in Togo is something which will not bring sympathy to them. They are beating people themselves. They are going from house to house, forcing people to join them. If you are not with us, you are against us kind of thing. And I do not think that is proper.
From the experience of the Arab Spring and then what happened in Burkina Faso, do you foresee the eventual end of the Nyasingbe dynasty?
It depends on how the opposition handles it. The Burkina situation was clear, and the international community was against what was happening because the man wanted to change the constitution. In this sense, I don't see a parallel, a similarity. So the opposition needs to really endear themselves to the international community for support to come from the international community. But I don't see that one. I hear calm has returned. They are divided the more. And you know, it's not the case like the Burkina situation. They may have a case in the next 3 years when they unite together strongly to build a democracy, not to create chaos.
Doc, we are very grateful for your time on our show tonight.
You're very welcome.
Dr. Vladimir Entridanson is the Director of Academic Affairs of the Ghana Armed Forces Command and Staff College. He's also an international relations expert. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. Keep your messages coming on 0266-026-941. We have on the line Hadib Sani. He is a security analyst. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
Do you foresee the protest in Togo over the weekend as one that could threaten the security of that country?
If it is not well managed, because a lot of examples can be juxtaposed with what is going on in Togo right now. We know, for example, Boko Haram started somewhere in 2002, but not as an armed movement. And up until 2009, when there was a funeral procession for one of their members, and the police opened fire on them, there was rampage after that. Then Goodluck Jonathan, the president of Nigeria in 2009, sent soldiers who were not well trained and who were very ragtag in nature to Borno and other parts of southern Nigeria. They didn't manage the situation well, and it went out of hand, and now whole West African sub-region have had to contend with the scourge of Boko Haram. So if the situation is not well managed and we also decide to sit aloof, wash our hands off Togo and feel it is an internal matter, so it has absolutely nothing to do with us, we should be up to a more complex issue than we can handle, especially talking about Ghana and especially talking about the fact that we share the same borders with them. Also, coming out on the heel of the fact that in Africa, because of the closely tied nature or closely tied nature of our societies, it is very commonplace that when there is lawlessness in one country, it has the tendency of spiraling out of control and spilling over to the next country, especially neighboring countries like Congo. We can talk about Rwanda, Burundi, we can talk about Sierra Leone, Liberia, Ivory Coast, Liberia, etc. Okay, and in 2002, the U.S. State Department under then former President George Bush came out with a report to the effect that terrorists always take advantage of lawlessness, especially in African countries, to establish their foothold to perpetrate acts of terrorism in not only those countries, but export it to other countries. So it is a matter of concern to us also, because of the proliferation of arms that might happen as a result of confusion or conflict in Togo. And Ghana might be a very good transit point for some of these armed traffickers. And who knows, not all the guns might get to Togo. Some might remain in Ghana and fall into the wrong hands. So there's a lot of risk. I mean, we are at risk as a result of what is going on there in Togo. And it doesn't just have a direct security threat to only the Togolese people, but we are also very vulnerable. That is why it's important that all measures are put in place to control it before it starts off.
All right. Thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. We are very grateful. Hadib Sani is a security analyst. We also have on the line the ranking member of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Foreign Affairs, who's a member of parliament for North Tongue, Samuel Okujatu Ablakwa. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Hi, good evening.
Should the opposition protest in Togo, which has led to the death of two people, be of concern to us here in Ghana?
Yeah, thank you very much and good evening to our distinguished listeners. Certainly it must be. Let us recall that similar disagreements between the opposition and government in 2005 led to at least 500 people losing their lives in Togo, and which created a challenge for us at the time, being, when I say us, I mean Ghana, being their closest neighbors. We had to receive a lot of displaced people, and that threat still exists. If you look at the coalition of opposition parties now in Togo, they are very determined this time for the Togolese to agree to return the country to the 1992 constitution of that country, so that there will be term limit on who becomes president, and they do not want foreigners to be to even contest the next elections in 3 years now. In 3 years from now, you do know that next year there will be parliamentary elections in Togo. And so this can escalate. And that is why some of us are calling for some diplomatic, very genteel goodwill. We are not referring to a military intervention. We are talking a diplomatic intervention where somebody who is respected across the aisle is able to engage both parties so that at least some commitment could be secured.
But it doesn't look like it's an organized party thing. We have Togolese living in Ghana also demonstrating. So how do you intervene?
That rather should tell you that it is very, very well organized. We are told that Saturday's protest, and I have monitored, it happened virtually in all global capitals where you have Togolese citizens domiciled. So it didn't only happen in Accra, it happened in Abuja and several other places. And so it tells you that this time the Togolese opposition is trying to organize. They have formed a number of coalitions. And you should also know that when it comes to Togolese politics, the ethnic factor is also very strong. And so these are volatile issues that could explode. And so you don't sit back and allow for these matters to get out of hand. And that is why some kind of a diplomatic intervention is needed. ECOWAS can move in and appoint a mediator. The closest neighbor, President Akufo-Addo, and because of Ghana's sterling democratic credentials, could also approach them if both parties are fine and have confidence in our president. He can play some mediation role. Right. At this point, what is needed is some mediation, somebody who can facilitate, bring both sides together to reason,
right,
to look at the Togolese national interest. That should be the way forward.
Very grateful for your time on our program tonight. Samuel Okudzeto Ablakwa is the ranking member of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Foreign Affairs and Member of Parliament for North Tongue. Some of your text messages. Hello, George. I like your interviews. I am behind you. Nija Mabingban Albert, EP College of Education, Bimbila, sent in that. The towing levy by Nanado-led administration tried implementing is good for Mother Ghana. We are only suspending it because we have Ghanaians at heart. You have Nanado, president, who is the listening one, Rafik, AOT, Tamale, PRO, NPP, SMS group. Hi, George. Indeed, Nanado is a listening president. Opambo Justice says so from Kwapong, Ahafong. Razak Bulun Kumbungo District's NPP SMS group organizer says, President Akufo-Addo is really a listening president. He feels the pains of the people in the country. NPP government will fulfill all the promises to the good people of Ghana, inshallah. Mashud Kukum Tamale, NPP SMS group president, says, Hi, George. We could see that this government has really got the people at heart. That is why the towing levy has been suspended. We are so grateful, you add. President Akufo-Addo and the NPP are a listening government. That is why Ghanaians voted for the NPP. Jake Kaliu Aye sent in that one. Abdullah Elias, Minister Santani Tonlon District, says, I think the suspension of the mandatory toll levy by the government of Ghana is in order. This clearly indicates that the president, Nana Addo, and his government is a listening one. May Allah grant President Akufo-Addo the wisdom to deliver. Good evening, George, and help me tell owners of the collapsed banks to accept criticism in good faith. Monica Combs in Navrungu says that. Good evening, George. I don't see the need why people are happy and commending the government for suspending the toll levy. Suspension does not mean total cancellation. The government has not abandoned the idea of the levy. It will be brought back. Efu Kwesi in Who says that. George, good evening. We need peace in Ghana. What the Togolese are doing is uncalled for. We have to close our borders with Togo. Jabal Maxwell in Willings says farmers are suffering. Government should help them. The only way government can help farmers is to help export their products. Government should add towing of cars to Ghana Fire Service, NADMO, and the Ghana Police Service instead of an independent body. This is the short run. This in the short run will help curb the carnage on our road. Honorable Bugdor Bugri Bruce from Zoa Nabdan District sent in that one. And I have a short press statement here from the National Coordinator, One District, One Factory. It says President Akufo-Addo is to launch the One District, One Factory policy. It says the President and Akufo-Addo will on Friday, 25th August 2017 at 1 p.m. launch his government flagship policy, popularly termed One District, One Factory, at Ekunfi in the central region. The program will be the formal launch of the implementation of the One District, One Factory policy in fulfillment of a pledge by the President Nana Akufo-Addo to see the actualization of the industrialization of Ghana as part of the transformation process he envisages for the country. The policy, when implemented, will create the environment conducive enough for each local government areas to own factories relative to their world-endowed resources and capacity to provide jobs and wealth for the country. It goes on and on, but the statement is signed by Honorable Gifty Ohene Kunadu Meses, National Coordinator, One District, One Factory. And this is how we end today's edition of today's program. My producers have been Asibi Bank.